Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm still learning a bit about this about this program, and hopefully, before long, it will be appropriately handled. We are on program number 47 of Externalization of the Hierarchy. And 46 has been sent out, and also 45. I'm starting anew and hoping that it becomes possible to finish this book before long. If you've had to wait a little bit at the beginning, when nothing is said, I apologize for that, but it's better to get this out to you than to keep fussing over it and send it out to another party to fix. So we're sharing our screen here, and in one of these corners, we also have the possibility, let's see here. Of showing the speaker's image, if that at all can help. Now, DK is getting into this question of the possible next war. And he's writing this in the middle 1940s, I guess, 45, 46, something like that. And it was quite a dire prediction. It's also found in the beginning of The Problems of Humanity, the very first introduction. A difficult thought, and we certainly have seen the tendencies towards that hostility between religions. So here we go. And I try to do here is, years ago, I said that the war which may follow, of course, Foster Bailey said he was assured by the Tibetan in the early 50s, maybe 51, 52, that there would be no atomic war. But maybe this is something different, I don't know. The danger still exists. Years ago, I said that the war which may follow this one would be waged in the field of the world religions. And you have to expect that because it is a sixth-ray matter largely. The warring religions are on the sixth ray, especially Islam and Christianity. The second ray is supposed to rule Christianity. I'm not sure about Islam, but there are many militant Christians who want to precipitate a war because they feel that somehow it will bring heaven closer, I guess that's what I can say. I'm going to make this just a little smaller. Okay. Such a war will not work out. However, in a similar period of extreme carnage and blood, such as the world had just gone through when DK was writing this, it will be fought largely with mental weapons in the world of thought. And this we already witness, do we not? The battle is on, but it is psychological. There are outbreaks of carnage and blood and stabbings and bombings and those kinds of things, but DK uses the word extreme, and so I imagine that he expects, should this precipitate, it's already partially precipitating, he expects carnage and blood, but not of the extreme kind. The firebombing of Tokyo, the firebombing of Dresden, the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and almost by accident, Nagasaki. That kind of devastation he does not anticipate. It will involve also the emotional realm from the standpoint of idealistic fanaticism. Well, we certainly see the fanatical tendencies of these two religions particularly. The sixth ray Orthodox Jewish religion has much fewer numbers, its own kind of fanaticism, but not an aggressive fanaticism which engages in war on the physical plane, although the thoughts are influential. This inherent fanaticism found ever in reactionary groups, you know, who are holding on to what they deem as absolutely necessary, will fight against the appearance of the coming world religion and the spread of esotericism. Well, we see that already. Alice Bailey is demonized, and so is Blavatsky, by these groups, and we see articles all the time that, without the slightest bit of understanding, attack Bailey and Blavatsky as if they were the greatest menace to the true religion, in which they believe. For this struggle, certain of the well-organized churches, through their conservative elements, their most powerful elements, are already girding themselves. And by this time, now some 80 years later, they are, 75 years later, they are active. I was, in all areas, Catholicism, Protestantism, those Wahhabi approaches in Islam, not Baha'i, no. But they are engaged in the battle now. It is somewhat working out on the physical plane, a great danger, unless there is great wisdom in the guidance of the countries involved, and usually that is not the case. Those sensitive to the new spiritual impacts are still far from powerful. Are they more powerful now? That's the question. That which is new always faces the supreme difficulty of superseding and overcoming that which is old and established. People hang on, and they do not want to leave the prison of their own making. The doctrinaire prison is the place that they prefer to remain. Fanaticism, entrenched theological positions just through the power of repetition, and many of them forgeries, really, says Blavatsky. Nothing like the reality of early Christianity, let us say. Fanaticism, entrenched theological positions, and, of course, materialistic selfishness are to be found actively organized in the churches in all continents and of all denominations. So he's very inclusive about this and finds these taints active everywhere. They can be expected to fight for their established ecclesiastical order, their material profit, and their temporal rule, forget spiritual, and already are making the needed preparations, and this is after the war. It's amazing how selfish human beings can be, even after such a lesson as the Great War from 1914 to 1945. Lessons still not learned. The coming struggle will emerge within the churches themselves. Now, there have been many modifications and the appearance in Catholicism of Pope John the 23rd liberalized many things, many practices, and overall had a beneficent effect upon Catholicism. But there are still these groups, Opus Dei, the works of God, very, very conservative groups that are authoritarian, ultra-conservative, reactionary, and they are still powerful. But their day is limited because we are at the very end of the sixth ray age of Pisces, and in less than 100 years, the Piscean influence, following its recrudescence, which is the danger, will no longer be the main focus. Even now, the rising Aquarianism is in combat with it. So within the churches themselves, there will be a struggle. We have noted the struggle, and we've noted beneficent results. We've also noted the recrudescence of reactionary tendencies and the hope on the part of the most conservative that Armageddon will precipitate. Of course, it's not the real Armageddon, that's the judgment day, let us say, but it's an anticipation of that which will occur far ahead. It will also be precipitated by the enlightened elements who exist in fair numbers already and are rapidly growing in strength through the impact of human necessity, which obviously the conservative reactionary elements do not meet. They cannot address human necessity, and the more liberal elements can. Page 454. The fight will then spread to thinking men and women everywhere who, in protesting revolt, have denied Orthodox churchianity and theology. Churchianity, it's a good word, isn't it? Let's add it to the dictionary. And this has happened. We have had the consciousness revolution. It accomplished much, and reaction to it has also taken place and continues to take place. It just depends on which stream of souls we're dealing with. It's hard when considering human beings in conflict to overlook the amount of incarnational, reincarnational experience they have had. They will insist on certain values that grow out of the degree of their limitation. And the more less experienced, let's say the less experienced, the more limited the outlook, more the passion, less the compassion, more the insistence to the point of fanaticism. So, these people who are beginning already to understand the necessity for newer and higher values, they are not irreligious, says the Tibetan, but have, through pain and sorrow, learned. They've actually learned, you know. None are so blind as those who will not see. Learned without ecclesiastical help that the spiritual values are the only values which can salvage humanity, that the hierarchy stands, and that Christ, as a symbol of peace and the leader of the forces of light, is not a negligible force, but one that is evoking response from the hearts of men everywhere. It's quite a beautiful little section there. And encouraging, very encouraging. Ecclesiastical approaches are supposed to help. So often they simply regiment and create fear and keep people in line so that they can be victimized. But, you know, out of consciousness grows thought and behavior. And consciousness grows out of experience. And the experience of many is very limited. Of course, better experiences will be offered during the Aquarian Age. True religion will come to be interpreted in terms of the will to good and its practical expression, goodwill. And this means the will to good, which includes all ashramic gifts, tendencies, and not just the gifts that ecclesiasticism wants to offer, so often simply regimentation. The coming world conferences, you know, this is before the United Nations was firmly established, but just on the eve of its establishment as successor to the unsuccessful League of Nations, the coming world conferences and the international councils will give indication of the strength of this new response on the part of humanity to the overshadowing spiritual potencies awaiting the invocative cry of mankind. So the conferences would help, did help, and are still helping. I mean, there's a danger of backsliding now, unless radical changes can take place within the human psyche. And this is 2020, and the present world pandemic is pushing us, all of humanity, whether we know it or not, towards those changes. So, a new spiritual response is on its way. And we mostly cry over the loss of those near and dear without looking at the larger picture, which is hard to do at first when the principles of esotericism have not yet been even basically inculcated. When that cry arises, these divine energies will precipitate themselves into the realm of human thinking and planning. Well, you know, maybe he's speaking of the returning hierarchy as divine energies, and that would be really correct rather than personalities per se. Men will then find themselves gifted with renewed strength and with the needed insight, which will enable them to drive out the entrenched materialistic forces and the power of selfish interests banded together to prevent human freedom. Even now it is so. And so many of the members of the human kingdom are held in the slavery of poverty and disadvantage, and it is an ignorance. And it would be hard to say that it was not done deliberately to keep them in control and to keep them from being a threat which would bring on a fairer distribution of resources. What is desirable is that the very intelligent people, intelligent in the material sense, who have cornered the resources of the world, should have enough love in their hearts and enough second ray influence from the soul of this planet to see to the right distribution. And that's coming, we're told. A group of seventh ray first degree initiates will be working on the problem, and those on the third ray could work on it as well. Certain minor ashrams or lesser ashrams within the great third ray ashram will be attending to this also. But right now, you know, I remember a debate which occurred lately, and the resources of one of the debaters, their superabundance, were being challenged, and his methods were being challenged. And he said in a moment of revelation, "It just means that I'm smart." So the values are very low, and others could suffer without the concern of this individual, as long as he could accumulate the resources which made him more powerful, and more powerful in the eyes of others, more materially powerful, let us say. If the conferences to be held in the near future demonstrate that mankind is truly striving to bring about right human relations, the forces of evil can then be driven back and the forces of light can take control. Well, as always with humanity, as so often anyway, partial victories are there, but never yet the complete overcoming and the complete victory that is needed. But when the suffering is sufficiently acute, then the will to drive through to the desirable conclusion will be strong enough to achieve that goal. I cannot see humanity, the greater share, almost the 99%, willing to live at extreme disadvantage, especially the lower brackets of that 99%, while some people, because of their intelligence and commitment to materiality, live with unneeded superabundance. It may be called socialism or democratic socialism, whatever it's called, but it basically engages that method which the super rich so detest, the majority that is, and that method is sharing. The Christ will return when sharing financially, requisite peace on earth, and a cleaning house have been accomplished to the degree that he knows in his own deliberations. The problem facing the hierarchy is how to further these desirable ends without infringing on human freedom of thought and action. According to the Syrian law of freedom, it's just not allowed to infringe. Now, the Black Lodge cares nothing about that. They aim to hit the target of will, or through will against will, and they mean to control, and they mean to enslave. But a uranianly transmitted law, the law of freedom, comes to our planet, and it cannot be violated by the Great White Lodge on our little planet. Others try to violate it. They may succeed for a time, and they will go down. No question. But meanwhile, the suffering and the delay, which students of esotericism can help to offset. It's quite a problem, you know, how to influence in the right direction without compelling through force. It is with this problem that the Great Council of the Spiritual Realm, well, let's call it the Council of the Shambhala, found on the Logoic Plain, of the Kingdom of God, a loose term, basically, but involving the entire cosmic etheric plane, or plane and subplanes, is dealing at this time, and it will provide the subject of their discussions and final decision until the middle of June. Well, we're back in 1945, and here we are again at a point nearing 2025 when the hierarchy is deliberating about how and what to do when 2025 comes and the first steps of the actual externalization are really taking place. So all of this, as you see, is planned out and probably takes us through in this instance, even the festival of the Christ. The three great spiritual festivals and the high point of the year. When the sun begins to move southward again, now that's going to be at the solstice, summer solstice, their decisions will have been made on the basis of human demand. Human demand, a form of invocation. I think human demand reached the Lords of Liberation back at the closing of 1942 and was sufficient to evoke them in a most necessary intervention, without which we wouldn't even be studying these matters in an enslaved state. Humanity will by then have indicated the strength and nature of its goodwill, a few months really, to do that. It would have sounded the word of invocation, reaching up into the spiritual realm, spiritual triad, soul, spiritual triad, like a breathing forth of the very soul of humanity. So we really have our part to play. We must ask, we must seek, we must knock. It would have expressed a measure of its willingness to sacrifice, the very first law of the soul. We have to have this willingness to sacrifice in order to stabilize human living and to rid the world of separativeness and of the abuses which culminated in this war. Extreme separativeness culminated in the Great War, which includes both World War I and World War II. DK at one point said, well, there would be no progress for humanity if the conditions as they existed before World War I had been perpetuated. So they had to be broken up. And those are deeper reasons behind the war about which the combatants knew little. They simply had privilege and power and nationalism in mind. They didn't know they were busy breaking up obstacles to the real progress of humanity. It will have expressed a measure of its willingness to sacrifice. Master Moria, as I've often said, when have you ever become less through sacrifice? It really deserves pondering. So that sacrifice will stabilize human living. It's true today. And to rid the world of the evidences of the great heresy of separativeness or separateness and all of those abuses which basically are uncaring, inconsiderate, dismissive, ignoring the fate of so many members of humanity. At least, it would at least have set the stage for the blueprinting and planning which the cycles of conferences and councils will undertake. Well, when you see the abuses and then you see humanity's better reaction to ending those abuses, then deliberations can be handled in such a way that progress results. On the side of the hierarchy, says DK, and in response to human demand, in degree and in kind, according to the quality of the demand, let it be occultly propelled, the hierarchy will play its part and aid in making possible that which men dream, vision, and for which they plan today. I guess, you know, all of this taken under the rubric of the wonders of the New Age. Wonders of the New Age, which we can hardly conceive, but like dreams come true on the physical plane. Okay. Let us consider for a minute what the hierarchy stands ready to do and what its members will plan and formulate during the Easter festival this month. So this is being written out, I guess, in March, and Easter is coming up here during the Waysack Festival in April. It's not always April, but that particular year it was. We can look it up, I suppose, but that's what it looks like. And during the Festival of the Christ at the end of May. It might be said that the hierarchy, in conjunction with the Great Council of the Will of God at Shambhala, will divide their work into three parts. It's Finland, it's May, and it's still cold. Each governing three phases of the coming restoration of humanity to civilized and cultured living on a new and higher turn of the spiral. So we're talking about hierarchy and the Great Council. And the elevation of humanity. They will deal with the problem of spiritual freedom. Well, notice it's even more than religious freedom. It's spiritual freedom because it exists in many areas that are not conventionally considered to be religious. But since they help humanity become more elevated, they are spiritual. Anything that uplifts humanity is spiritual. Spiritual freedom is Uranian, isn't it? And it embodies itself in the four freedoms enunciated by, as he would say, that great disciple, Franklin D. Roosevelt. And it embodies itself in the four freedoms. And with the problem of right human relations, as it will express itself through international relations, national parties, and general human affairs. So they're going to, these forces, as reflected by humanity, I wonder if we have thought about how spiritually free we are. Just pause for a moment and just think that. Okay. The four freedoms. It involves freedom to worship, freedom of speech, freedom from want, freedom from fear. You know how simply and directly first-ray types can enunciate what is needed. First-ray types are not only the destroyers, they are, as the Tibetan tells us, the enunciators, putting forth the new ideas which demand presentation and which, when followed, will break up the old adhesions. It is not for me to tell you what humanity, through its statesmen and leaders, will plan to do at the coming conferences. He leaves that, I think, to the sensitive statesmen and leaders. It is my task to mobilize the new group of world servers and the men and women of goodwill so that they may stand as a great army of implacable spiritual will behind the participants in these conferences and councils, enabling them to think with clarity about the issues involved and thus, through this clear thinking, affect telepathically the minds of men. Well, that's a tall order, isn't it? It is my task to mobilize, he says, the new group of world servers and the men and women of goodwill so that they may stand as a great, and I love this phrase, army of implacable spiritual will. It's really, it's really worth enlarging because it's needed today. It's needed today. Behind the participants at these conferences and councils. I'm remembering Master Moria said there were, he didn't call them Vimanas, HBB did, but you know, there were airplanes and air vehicles in Atlantis, and people rapidly raced in them all over the world to cheat each other. Who could get there first and cheat the other? There is this tendency towards retrogression on our planet, and our planetary logos is not yet a sacred planetary logos, however sacred he is in his status compared to ours. So clear thinking affects the minds and thus the behavior of other human beings, and this involves the use of a power seldom employed as yet on the side of righteous endeavor, though already widely used by the materialistic leaders of the forces of evil. Well, what is it? Is it the force of propaganda? Is it the willingness to do anything without conscience? I was reading today that one of the leaders of a significant nation has no conscience whatsoever. All subsidiary to a narcissistic will to dominate. You think that since the times of ancient Rome and through the introduction of Christianity that we would have outgrown such things. It is the task of the hierarchy to find and reach the enlightened men and women in all the churches, all the political parties, all the organizations, social, economic, and educational, so that their united purpose will be clear. This is an issue of communication, bringing on communion, and I think we can see under Gemini that if this communication is successful, then people can unite around an uplifting, beneficent purpose. And hierarchy has to educate. Educate. And so many resist being educated because their emotions encourage them to cling to the final answer they have found. Final answer, the final revelation. It's the height of stupidity, but okay. That's where some people are, and we've probably been there too at some point. Hierarchy. This they will do through the medium of their active working disciples in the world. So we are the ones, as the new group of world servers, who have to reach the enlightened men and women in all churches, in all political parties, all organizations, socially, social, economic, and educational. Ours is the educational task. The task of the light bearers, the active working disciples in the world, have a huge task before them at that time and remaining. We can't imagine that the final prying loose from the dogmas of Piscianism and the sixth ray will be nonviolent. There will be violence. And it may be internal violence, which certainly exists, and probably, as indications go, it will be accompanied by outbreaks of external violence, as we normally conceive violence. Thus, the hierarchy and these disciples, they will pave the way for the true freedom of mankind, a freedom which is as yet a dream and a hope in even the most democratic countries. Freedom. What people imagine it to be is rather license and not freedom. Freedom from form begins to be freedom. The freedom to reject the higher influences and to adhere interminably to the form is a form of license, which is retrogressive. It seems we can go either forward or backward, but so great is the pressure behind the evolutionary forward movement that Master DK says there will be delay, maybe 300 years, that's one of the figures he used, but not defeat. But behind all this activity, watched over by the spiritual guides of the race, but determined and implemented by humanity itself, will be found the focused attention of the hierarchy. You know, in a household, the toddler, the baby may be in a playpen, but the hierarchy, the parental hierarchy, is aware, listens, keeps watch. and supervises. But you can weaken the child by doing too much for that child and not letting the child learn to do for himself or herself. So, as Master Moria says, to give all is to put on chains. This spiritual tension which exists among them is far more potent than any of you suspect. It is part of their, we're talking about hierarchy now, their preparatory work to make available certain spiritual forces and powers, which though complementary or supplementary to the self-initiated effort of mankind, will make that effort successful. What humanity has to do now and is already doing to a certain degree is to arrive at a right orientation as regards human affairs. So, an incredible point of tension provided by hierarchy, an incredible potent point of tension. The road winds upward all the way, and things will get no easier for us as we begin to truly join the ranks of the hierarchy. We just would have become better at handling time and more efficient in carrying out our service and more loving and more foresightful and more willing. And so we will be able to do what to the younger souls seems impossible, just as hierarchy can do today what to us would be impossible for us. What humanity has now to do is right orientation. Let us therefore look at the three phases of this preparatory work now going on and endeavor to gauge what will be the results if these energies and potencies are released through the invocative demand of humanity. So we're going to begin with probably in a next program. I'm going to begin with restoration, probably go to, I would guess, enlightenment, and then to reconstruction. It's a huge labor, friends. And the hierarchy strides centuries, and not just days the way we do. You know, I'm a little amused. It's rightly said by people in the 12-step programs, one day at a time, because that's what has to be handled. And that's difficult enough. But just imagine hierarchy. 1 year at a time, 1 decade at a time, one century at a time. So far-reaching is their planning. And it has to be. They are far-sighted, and they understand what must be carried forward, even though we are blind in so many ways and so often feel like helpless pawns in the swirl of forces. But once our alignments are created and sustained, then a great source of strength is there, and we can have continuity of contact with the great energies, and not just episodic bursts of trying to do better. Well, that's better than nothing. this is the vanguard, work in theosophy like this. But of course, it's just a humble little thing compared to those who have gone on ahead. And one day we will learn the significance of this whole process of emanation and return on the emanative stream. We will learn the retraction of the emanation. We will learn the timing of the going forth and the returning, because not all apparently divided units perceptually shrunken in their scope go forth at the same time. They don't all go forth at the same time. Some remain. Looks like the elder brother, was it the elder brother, remained in Shambhala or in the father's house longer than the son who went forth, the Jiva, who went forth on his monadic journey. He went forth. And out of enthusiasm for redemption, and suffered accordingly and learned accordingly until all the perceptual subdivisions of the universal logos have worked in the quarries below, have built the temple, have destroyed the temple, have elevated the quality into the triad and into the jewel, and have returned to the monad, enriched. And all of this, whatever path is taken, is foreseen, though not compelled, in the absolute infinitude, which is the self-reflection of the transcendental deity, the super-universal deity. Well, that gets into other highly abstract philosophical matters. But interesting. You know, when you really start lifting the veil on these things, we live in an ultra amazing reality. And even the limited universe, vast though it is ultra amazing. Well, you know, we're reaching the end of this one. And sometimes I forget to press save, you know, and it all disappears. But here, oh, I love that. The army of implacable spiritual will, the army of implacable spiritual will cannot be deflected, cannot be diluted, cannot be dispersed, cannot be attenuated, cannot be weakened. The army of implacable spiritual will. So we're at the end of program number 47. And we're dealing with program number 48 next. This will be of, you know, 1 hour and 8 minutes. And it's page 453 to what? To 456. I wish we could go faster, and if I were a different person, we would be. But I pause to extend the thought. So this is the 16th of May, 2020, and 48, I hope it will also be the 16th, and we'll be starting at page 456 as we look at three phrases of preparatory work. My guess would be that the higher spiritual interlude of the year defines these three phases. We might say, whoop, that's no good. And we might say here, does the the higher interlude of the year define these three phases? It would be logical if it did. Aries, restoration. Taurus, enlightenment. Gemini, reconstruction. The plan is being restored now. The light is still coming. Reconstruction. Well, many things have been reconstructed after World War II, but new wars have taken place. It's been a warring century, and if you look at places in the Middle East, you'll see great destruction of the buildings, the infrastructure, the places that human beings live, the ways they live. We must reconstruct based upon a better model, a more archetypal model. Is it worth doing all this? I really can't think of anything that is more worthwhile than helping the divine plan to materialize on our planet. Hierarchy is entirely dedicated to this, reaching out towards Shambhala, reaching down towards humanity and the other kingdoms, not to be forgotten. Hierarchy is for this, and Master DK has sometimes said, don't you think there are other things to interest us other than taking care of you? You know, and I'm sure many a parent has thought of just that. One is committed to take care of one's creations or procreations, and it's only right, but there are other possibilities that loom ahead that maybe look a little more attractive. But I suppose it's possible to get into such a spiritually sacrificial state of mind that doing the next sacrificial duty on behalf of others does become the most attractive thing. One imagines the Christ consciousness as being that, so filled with love, so assured of identification with absolute reality, that the main attraction of the psyche, that which gives the most satisfaction, is to see to the needs of others. A great psychic gift, we're told, to be aware of the needs of others. And of course, even more than the demand comes to act upon helping those needs be fulfilled without robbing the individual in need of their own initiative and their own will and their own attempts to rise. I've sometimes used the little analogy. I remember my son had an incredible sense of balance when he was young. He had a lot of Libra in his chart, you know. But with those little bicycles, you can fall over quite easily. So we put on the training wheels, and I ran along with the bicycle, and he was quite confident. And then I let go without him knowing it, And he just kept going in perfect balance. And the training wheels, I think it came a time the training wheels were not necessary. No, I was just kind of running along, and then I just let go. And he was handling it himself. And then I think he realized it, and I can't remember whether he fell off the bicycle or whether he just kept going and everything was fine and managed to dismount. But just imagine that the parent keeps running, exhausting himself and robbing the youngster of the possibility of self-achievement without the sustaining aid, almost the interfering aid of the overly concerned parent. So it's quite a balance. And as we began to read about it, hierarchy has that responsibility to help but not violate the law of freedom. Well, you know, in the old days, I used to like to go on with these programs for hours, but since I'm dealing with a new platform, I don't want to take risks, and I will then call this program number 47 to a close and continue after it is secured at the time that is available to do so. So, lots of love to you, many blessings, progress along the way, and a sustained point of tension. Not possible for us all the time, okay, but a sustained point of tension, which will guarantee in the long run the progress. So I'll stop recording and hope for the best. And we'll see you a little later. Stop recording.